McLean is the founder and chief uncle with Uncle Matt's Organics. They are an organization that's been fueling families with uncompromised organic nutrition for decades at this point. Matt, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, George. Appreciate the time and opportunity to tell our story.
Yeah, excited to have you on. Tell us a little about your personal life, some more about your work, and why you're doing what you're doing.
Yeah, so let's see. Uncle Matt's Organic started in June of 1999. Hard to believe we're 25 years into this thing. I'm a fourth generation Florida citrus grower. We're located just west of Orlando, a little town called Claremont. It used to be the citrus capital of Lake County, but now a lot of things have changed, and we're mostly a commuter city for the theme parks. But you can find Uncle Matt's nationwide, from Hawaii to Alaska to Maine to even Puerto Rico. Retailers over 15,000 doors, Kroger, Publix, Walmart, Whole Foods, Sprouts, to name a few.
And is it just a function of taking over the family business, or what is the driving force behind the growth and the expansion and everything you're doing?
Yeah, so we I actually grew up in the citrus business. My great grandfather, my father, my granddad, they were all in citrus. I had uncles, brother. So it definitely was in the blood, but I went to college to get out of agriculture. I thought, you know, hey, I want to go into the business side of stuff. I had dreams of being a banker or, you know, something on Wall Street. But when I got out of college, it was interesting, the opportunities I had in either sales or marketing. But I had a chance. I got connected with one of my father's consulting clients. He was a German gentleman who had citrus groves, and he wanted help exporting fresh fruit and juice from Florida over to different customers in Europe. And I said, hey, that sounds like a lot of fun. That's better than other ideas I had and other job offerings I had. So I started a little import-export business and was traveling to Europe and then eventually to the Middle East, selling Florida conventional grapefruit juice, orange juice, et cetera. And eventually that turned into organic. And that led me to the Uncle Matt's and the aha moment that there was no organic orange juice in the late 90s in the U.S. And so that little idea sparked Uncle Matt's.
Excellent. It's just interesting how things take shape.
Yeah, I definitely, when I went to college, I didn't see it ending this way. I mean, I had visions of being a great, successful business person, but I didn't know it would be full circle back into agriculture in citrus, which we grew up in and which I love. And so it was really the perfect fit when I realized, like, hey, this is, you know, something I'm going to be doing for a while. It really just doesn't feel like work because it's a passion. I love every bit of it, from the challenge of growing organic and the agronomy side, to a new product and being that challenger brand. I mean, we'll probably be the challenger brand for a long, long time when you're battling Coke and Pepsi, Tropicana and Simply. You know, they're big companies, but we continue to chip away. And it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun being that little challenger brand and being new and different and nimble and having a great tasting product.
Amen. So many questions there. I'm curious about starting. What were some of the challenges of starting an organic orange juice company when there just wasn't in existence? I'm curious about headwinds from regulators. I'm curious about, you've got those huge brands that probably just are interested in either stepping on you or acquiring you. So much.
Yeah, there's a lot wrapped in there. So kind of in the beginning, how to start that business, if I had to do it over again, I would have said, geez, you know, the perishable side is the most difficult. We produce a batch every day, and you have a clock that's ticking on your shelf life because it's perishable. So that's number one right out of the gate. I picked one of the most difficult things in the food industry to do, which is perishable. So when I started, I had 600 cases. That was my minimum run. I had to run 600 cases, and there were 6 bottles in every case. And that's what I had to sell. And I had to sell it in about 14 days. So the total shelf life, there was enough for the retailer to get through it on their shelf. And so That is the most motivating thing in business. When you go, okay, so let's see, 600 cases, that's going to cost me how much money? And if I don't sell those 600 cases, how much money is that going to cost? That's a lot of money to lose. So you've never been as motivated to sell as when you have a perishable refrigerated item. But that's what I chose because it was the best tasting. It was the premium product. You could do orange juice, hot filled, sitting in a bottle on the shelf, but it tastes terrible. You scalp off all the flavor because of the extreme heat. It degrades the color and the nutrients in there because of that. So we went for what tastes the best, and quality and consistently great quality is what we go after every day. So that was perishable orange juice.
That is great. Just as somebody who appreciates the value in a deadline or having that sense of urgency, that, to your point, there's not too many that are finer than that. So you brew the batch, you've done the math, you've got these 600 cases. We've got to figure out how to get these in the folks' hands ASAP, literally.
Yeah, correct. And so initially when I would go out, I found a local supermarket chain. It was an upscale supermarket chain in Orlando called Gooding's. And I think at the time they had 13 stores. And I thought, boy, that's huge. That's fantastic. And then I found a variety of smaller independent. Chamberlain's was a good natural food store. They had, I think, 12 stores. And then I filled in a variety of distributors, a produce distributor called Albert's Organics, that took organic produce up and down the East Coast. And our orange juice was perfect to hop on those stores. And so they went to a lot of natural food independents. And so I pieced together enough 600 bottles, 600 cases in 2 weeks to be able to consistently turn it. Not every time, a couple of times like, oh, okay, that was short dated. We had to, send that to the food bank. But you quickly started adding more and adding more people. Signed up a good food broker. That food broker then really helped push when they went into the stores, like, hey, do you have this product on the shelf? Taste it, try it. They helped me with putting together programs because each little store has a flyer, right? Like, hey, here, you want to be in my flyer? Save a dollar, put it in the flyer, and then your velocity goes. And if that sells well, then they give you more facing. So we go from one little facing up at the top to now you move down a shelf, and now you're at two or three facings, and now you become just more legitimate. Your volume gets bigger, and you continue to build with momentum. But it's got to start with a good tasting product, actually a great tasting product. And if you don't stay consistently with that, none of the model works, no matter what you put out there.
That's the trick on that one. I have so much respect for, certainly for somebody who's brewing small batch, but then you start creating, brewing, I apologize. What is the right term for orange juice?
Squeeze. It's okay.
Squeezing yep. massive amounts and maintaining mm-hmm. consistent quality. That's right. Exceptional.
Yeah, there's a lot to it. That was the other thing. My background in citrus really helped, right? So I grew up drinking orange juice and grapefruit juice my entire life. And then when I started that export business to Europe and the Middle East, I had a lot of different customers from different regions, and they had different taste profiles. So I learned a good amount about the quality of juice and what makes the quality of juice taste the way it does. So the Brix, which is the natural sugar, they call it Brix, B-R-I-X in the industry. So Brix, then you have acid, you have ratio, you have oil levels, and then you have all the different varieties. So you have different varieties of oranges, early season, mid season, late season. They have different flavor, they have different color. And so how do you consistently try and mix those together throughout the season, throughout the year? You have an off season where there is no oranges, so you have to store it and you have to bring it back in the off season and blend it and put it together so it tastes correct. And so all of that is an art form. And I was fortunate enough because I grew up in the business, and then my import-export business led me to have that expertise. So it was kind of, I guess, divine intervention from that standpoint.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like that's the case. And how challenging was it to shift from non-organic to producing organic?
Yeah, well, for our family, it was very interesting timing, because my grandfather was towards the end of his life. He had began farming, 1930s, 1940s, 1950s, and he was alive. He was born in 1919, so he was alive when there weren't pesticides and there weren't synthetic fertilizers. He said, it
Oh.
wasn't until after World War II that that stuff was really invented. So his father farmed basically organically. My grandfather started farming organically, and they just didn't call it that because they didn't have, a terminology for it. But it was about building a healthy soil. It was about cover crops, compost, manure, really the natural way to do it out in the grove. And so from an agronomy standpoint, it made perfect sense to him when I came back on that meeting after I had the German inquiry about organic. I came back and met with my granddad and my father, and he was excited. He was very excited that, hey, this at the end of his life, he had had this calling feeling that we should go back to a lot of those practices, because he had observed over decades that he felt we were on the wrong path in agronomy, and we were doing more single factor analysis. Hey, we're going in, and if you find a pest, then I need to find a pesticide. And if I have a weed, I need to find a herbicide. If I find a fungus, I need to find a fungicide. Instead, how he used to farm, they didn't have that. And so they would, from cover crops, from more biodiversity in the soil, more biodiversity in the grove, natural predators. That would work in harmony, and not perfect harmony, but that would work in harmony to keep a lot of disease pressure down. And so, as those things got eliminated and you went more synthetic and you went more single factor, you actually saw more pest pressure and you created more problems. And the trees had less and less lifespan. They weren't living as long, and the soil was depleted of some of those key things. In the soil and the microbes, because of herbicides and things that were being applied to it. So for him, it was a really just a cathartic moment of, hey, this is complete for him. Like, we can go back and do it organic, and we should do it organic. Those methods of farming were not disproven; they were merely displaced by new technology. And he felt that we really should go back to a lot of those old methods. So it was. That was the first step. Could we even grow it, and could we go back to farming organic? Because there is no roadmap here. There is not the University of Florida or the USDA. You can't go there, and you definitely couldn't go there in 19, the late 90s, and say, how do I transition to organic? How do I go back to these farming methods? We had a lot of a learning curve, a steep learning curve, but not as steep as others because of my granddad and my father's experience.
I think that that's so cool. I wrote down harmony versus disharmony and just trying to be attuned to nature versus over-engineering and forcing it.
Yeah, and it's very interesting as agriculture and organic becomes more popular. It's very similar to human health. And now, if you look at what's trending and what's people are really looking at now in human health, is your gut microbiome. That your immunity is actually in your gut. And your gut-brain axis. And so you want to have a good, healthy microbiome. And what do you find when you take a lot of these other things from that the doctors will give you that are not natural? It depletes it. It depletes your natural microbiome that helps you fight pathogens and improves your immune system and helps you function. And so the soil is the same thing. And we saw it over many decades. My grandfather witnessed it over many decades that, hey, the health of the tree is changing. It's not getting better. If all these methods are better, why is the lifespan of my tree less? And why am I having more disease pressure than we had 30, 40, 50 years ago? And that is a big thing. You reduce the biodiversity of the population of the friendly pest. From spraying pesticides, you reduce the healthy microbiome and the biology in the soil. from Roundup and different herbicides and fungicides that are sprayed. And so you're just, you became, you know, always dependent upon everything that you're putting out on the soil and in the leaf.
What does the future hold?
I think it's great. You know, where there is a will, there is a way. And we have survived for 25 years. And, you know, organic has survived longer than that. It's still a small percentage of the marketplace. You know, 2 to 3% probably for orange juice. 5 to 6% for the industry overall has been penetrated. And then some stuff is as high as 15%, like salads. So I think as each segment continues to catch up with supply on the demand, we will continue to grow, which is great. And I think overall, people are becoming more aware of their health. And, you know, how after the pandemic, what do I need to do to really change my health and be, you know, more resilient to disease? And also people want to have longevity. I want to live to 100. That's one of my goals. I'm a little bit past halfway there. I want to be able to affect my future generations for my kids and be able to teach them some of the lessons that my granddad and great-granddad taught him. So
I think that that's excellent. And so in general, organic foods are around 15% of the market. Is that fair?
So it would be about 5% on average. If you looked at everything, when you walked in the supermarket and you said, you know, from beans to orange juice to salad mixes, the highest is salad. The highest salad has penetrated up to 15%. So some of the things that you can say from a consumer standpoint, like, hey, pesticide residue, eating produce has penetrated higher. But I think long term, that's our goal, the industry. Can we get to 10 or 15% as an average? You know, that would be really fantastic.
That would be a really, really fantastic and powerful thing. Do you think that if, is it a literacy issue or is it just a momentum issue where consumers are starting to learn about it and therefore they're asking and demanding it? Or is it just, I don't see the consequence, so I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing?
Yeah, I mean, one out of the gate, I wish I could say I knew the answer to that.
Sure.
I think as people become more aware about their own health and what they're eating and reading labels, you know, the next generation, the younger generation is more aware, right? I mean, they go on social media and they dive deeper into, well, what does this company really stand for? What are your practices? What really are the ingredients? Where do they come from? That's the first part, is just having the desire to seek out knowledge and learn more about what you are putting in your body. But organic, we still have a good ways to go from pricing. You know, we are we're higher priced than our conventional counterparts. They have a fantastically efficient machine that's much larger than us, so they can grow crops, you know, much larger efficiency scale, process it more efficient. And then they have more dollars to promote, et cetera, as bigger brands. But, you know, that's, I'm not complaining about that. That's just part of the challenge. We go out there and try to be the best we can every day. And we're fine just chipping away. As long as we, at the end of the day, I can lay my head on the pillow and know that, hey, we have been consistently great today with the product and the effort, then I can sleep well.
All we can expect from you, Matt McLean, is for you to go out and be the best version of you every day. And it sounds like you're certainly doing that. So I'm grateful for your work. And I was thinking as you were sharing all that with me that I think that the main reason that my wife and I consume organic foods is mostly because of our kids. And I probably would have been fine just shoving anything in my mouth for the foreseeable future. But once you have kids, it just changes your aperture a little bit. So who knows? We just need more people to have kids, Matt, and we'll bring that percentage from 5 way up fast. So
well, if we just get the kids, that's a really good start.
For sure. Well, thank you so much for coming on, and thanks for all your work and your efforts. Where can people learn more? Where can they get their, where can they find Uncle Matt's?
Absolutely. So if you go to UncleMatts.com, we have a product locator. Click on our product locator, put in your zip code, and it'll tell you exactly what stores in your neighborhood you can find us there. If for some reason there is nothing there and we are an Uncle Matt's food desert around you, you can actually order online from us. I will warn you, it's not as affordable as if it's in your local supermarket, but we will still gladly ship it to you through e-com. So you can get us either in a local store or via direct, UncleMatts.com.
Excellent. Well, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Matt your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to UncleMatts.com and check out everything that Matt and I have been talking about. Learn more about the company and what they believe to be the right way to make delicious foods and products. And then hit the product locator button and find out what stores are closest to you. And worst case scenario, you can order it and have it delivered. Thanks again, Matt.
Hey, George, appreciate the opportunity. Have a great day.
Till next time, remember, do your part by doing your best, just like Matt.